Good afternoon, ladies and gents. It's September 10th, 2013, and Current Sports is back on your radio. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. It is one hot and humid day out there, people. Hope you all are staying cool and drinking plenty of water. And we have one hot and steaming show in store for you all today. We'll talk about the Tigers, who couldn't pull one out over the Sox last night and get Scherzer the big 2-0, the White Sox, that is. We'll update you on the dirty hit by Ndamukong Suh, a local kid from right here in Lansing, will now be the Chip starting QB this weekend, and a shocking report from Sports Illustrated paints an ugly picture in the world of college football and recruiting. Plenty to get to, including a chat with USA Today NFL columnist Jared Bell as he gives us his thoughts on week one. Don't touch that dial.
From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, it's Current Sports.
Moving high in the air, left field, ball is hit well, that ball is way back, and it's going to carry out. There's a home run, it's a solo shot for Victor Martinez.
From the Washington 25, it is Vic with Tom. Fires end zone, touchdown!
Nobody brings my game to that limit like Novak did, so congratulations, Novak, for you are an amazing player.
After the interception, during the return, personal foul, illegal low block, number 90.
And the question is what it deems to be the appropriate punishment for Ndamukong Suh.
Yes, welcome to Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. I want to remind you all that you can weigh in. Let your voice be heard each and every weekday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on WKAR AM 870. Follow me on Twitter at Al Martin WKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even email me at almartin@wkar.org. Don't be shy. Hit us up. We always want to hear what's on your mind. And, of course, you know you can give us a call right here at Current Sports by calling 517-355-9527. That's 517-355-9527. And how you've been enjoying the show so far, I encourage all the dedicated Current Sports listeners out there to let us know what you like, don't like, and pose some conversations you would like to hear discussed right here on the show. Again, tweet me, Facebook me, give us a call. Hit us up. We always want to know what's on your mind. We have a lot to get to today. And today, folks, we're asking you to call in 517-355-9527 and give your thoughts, your opinions on the Detroit Lions this season. Now, the Lions, of course, topped the Minnesota Vikings this past Sunday. Reggie Bush looked like an animal. They seem to be keying in on Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson had a lackluster day. But how do you think the Detroit Lions are going to play this year? Do you think they're going to make the playoffs? We want to know what's on your mind as far as the Lions are concerned. Again, pick up that phone. Yes, you listening right now. 517-355-9527. You know what? Before we get to our discussion portion of the show, we also will be chatting with Jared Bell, USA Today NFL columnist. He knows all things NFL. If you got any NFL questions for him, we're going to be chatting with him in just a second. 517-355-9527. You guys are wasting no time at all with giving us a call here. We have Josh on line one. Josh, welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, Josh, this is Al. We went to Annapolis High School together.
My goodness, way back, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. First of all, I wanted to congratulate you and everything that you're doing, man. Great job. And you're always talking about how you're going to do this one day, and to actually see you do it, man, it's a great inspiration, buddy. I'm very happy for you.
Hey, thanks a lot, Josh. Yeah, even in high school, man, I had that dream, huh?
Yeah, and you're living it, and I'm very proud of you, man. I just wanted to first off say that for you.
Thanks a lot, Josh. Thanks a lot, man.
And Al, I mean, I got a question for you, man. Everybody's talking about football. Mm-hmm. Everybody's talking about baseball, but nobody's talking about the big event this Saturday, and that's Mayweather versus Canelo Alvarez.
Yeah.
I want to know your thoughts about it, man. I haven't heard anything. What's your thoughts? What's going on? What do you think? You think Canelo's going to be the one, or you think Mayweather's going to just continue on?
Well, first off, Josh, thanks so much for the encouragement, and thanks so much for the call. Really appreciate it. And you're right. Mayweather, Floyd Money Mayweather, is going against Canelo Alvarez this weekend, this Saturday. And I tell you what, When you look at the age difference between these two fighters, with Mayweather and Alvarez, it's a big age difference. I mean, Mayweather's getting up there. He's even been talking about retirement. This might be one of his last fights that we ever see Mayweather when he gets in the ring. But when you talk about Canelo Alvarez, he's a young kid who is very fast, very powerful. His punch packs, you know, it packs some heat to it. Now, I tell you what, though. And I got to say this, even though Floyd Mayweather's fights are probably, I mean, I'd rather watch, it's like watching the MSU offense, to tell you the truth. It's pretty boring.
Yeah.
Pretty boring, yeah. Man. Pretty boring. But Floyd Mayweather is, you know, when his fights, they're going to go 12 rounds and they're going to end with a decision. That's how it always is. And Floyd Mayweather, in my opinion, as far as my lifetime and when I've been watching boxing, is probably the best defensive fighter I've ever seen. So even though Canelo Alvarez, he's going to come out there, he's going to try to come out. I think Canelo Alvarez is going to come out and really try to just go out there and exhaust a lot of energy on trying to hurt Floyd Mayweather early. But I don't think it's going to work, and I think it's going to be like every other fight, Josh.
To be honest with you, I think it's going to be a little bit back and forth, and I do agree. I mean, Mayweather's probably the best defensive fighter since Floyd Patterson.
Right.
What I was going to say, though, is, all right, so let's say he does take down Canelo like it's supposed to happen, just like you said, just – lining them up, just let them pick them off. Think right. Pacquiao's going to come at it. You think he's going to ever do a Pacquiao fight for his final fight with Showtime, or you think he's just going to call it a career with no Pacquiao? If that's the instance.
Right, right. Well, I tell you what, man, I don't know. I don't think that Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather fight is ever going to happen just because of politics. I mean, these guys have been going back and forth for years and years and years, and we've still, you know, hadn't seen anything from them. So I don't ever see the Floyd Mayweather Pacquiao fight ever happening. Sad to say, because I think it's bad for boxing. But, you know, at the same time, watching both of those fighters throughout the years have been something special. I just really hope, I think the competitiveness in boxing is really drained, and that's one of those instances. But, Josh, thanks so much for your call. Really appreciate it, man. All right, brother. Well, we still got our headliners to get into. Let's just highlight some of the biggest stories in the sports world going on right now. All right, the Tigers. The Tigers lose to the Chicago White Sox yesterday, 5-1 the final. The White Sox stopped pitcher Matt Scherzer from recording his 20th win of the season. Triple Crown winner Miguel Cabrera was ejected by home plate umpire Brian Gorman for complaining to Gorman that he had checked his swing on an 0-1 pitch by Chris Sale that struck him in the right knee. Manager Jim Leland ran out to defend his player, and he was booted as well. Now, Chris Sale, who's 11-12, he outpitched Scherzer, denying him a 20th victory. Sale gave up one run and four hits in eight innings to win for the fifth time in six decisions. Now, Scherzer, who's 19-3, gave up five runs and six hits in four innings, and he also lost consecutive starts for the first time ever this season after Boston beat him on September 3rd. It was Detroit's fifth loss in six games, dropping the Tigers' lead in the AL Central to 4.5 games over Cleveland. Now, today's pitching matchup is Rick Porcello against Chicago's Eric Johnson. 8:10 is tonight's first pitch, ladies and gents, so tune in for that. All right, Ndamukong Suh. We have an update on Ndamukong Suh. The NFL is reviewing Lions defensive tackle Sue's low block on Minnesota Vikings center John Sullivan in Sunday's season opener. And Ray Anderson, the league's executive vice president of football operations, said a suspension has not been ruled out as a possible punishment. He says, quote, all options are on the table with a repeat offender. Anderson said by phone this morning, you can honestly say it's being reviewed for either a fine and or suspension given his repeat offender status. Now, Sue was fined five times in his first three NFL seasons and suspended for stomping on the arm of Green Bay Packers offensive lineman Evan Dietrich Smith on a Thanksgiving incident in 2011. Now, last year, he was fined $30,000 for kicking Houston Texans quarterback Matt Schaub in the groin on Thanksgiving. And as a rookie, he was fined three times, twice for hits on quarterbacks Jake Delhomme and Jay Cutler, and once for using an opponent for leverage on a field goal. And in 2011, he was also fined for a preseason hit on Andy Dalton. So this is not the first time, not the first rodeo when it comes to fines and Ndamukong Suh. All right, Cooper Rush. One start into his career as Central Michigan starting quarterback, Alex Niznak has been replaced. Yes, during today's MAC coaches teleconference, CMU head coach Dan Enos announced that redshirt freshman Cooper Rush has been named the starter for week three against UNLV. So we've seen two local kids from the Mid-Michigan area, Alex Niznak and now Cooper Rush starting this Saturday. Now, Rush led the Chippewas back to a 24-21 win over New Hampshire this past week. He threw for 3 touchdowns, all in the second half, and finished the game with 326 yards. And so, yeah, Cooper Rush, he'll be behind center this Saturday. That's exciting stuff. All right, Calhoun, Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. Michigan State Shalique Calhoun has been named Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week. Calhoun scored 2 defensive touchdowns, returning a fumble and an interception for scores. He is the Spartans' leading scorer. Can you believe that? Yes, I just said that. He's the Spartans' leading scorer on defense, a defensive end, with 18 points through 2 games this season. Can you believe that? Now, the touchdown Saturday gave Calhoun 3 on the season, and he is the first Michigan State player to have 3 defensive touchdowns in a season since T.J. Turner in 1999. Calhoun is also the only football FBS player with 3 defensive scores this season. Can't believe that. All right, Oklahoma State. Several Oklahoma State football players received benefits during a period of spanning from 2011 as of recently, 2001, excuse me, to as recently as 2011, earning money for their performance via assistant coaches, boosters, and, quote, no-show sham jobs, according to a story released today by Sports Illustrated. That's the big news in the sporting world today. The Sports Illustrated report includes the testimony of 8 former OSU players who in turn implicated 29 former teammates in a damning incident of a fast-rising program's willingness to flaunt NCAA rules and standards in paying players for money for on-field successes. Now, some players earn $2,000 annually per report, and a, quote, a few stars upwards of up to $25,000 annually. Can you believe that? It's really going to get messy as the days go on and people start to read this article. Now, during his weekly press conference, Coach Mike Gundy said in a statement, quote, I'll be real honest with you. I know the part that many have involved me. I'm not sure we know it all yet, but we've had tremendous support from the administration, from the people behind the scenes who have looked at this and researched it. I'm going to guess that once we get all the information and we can see what's out there, then our administration and the people inside will look at it and we'll see where we made mistakes and we'll try to make ourselves better and we'll correct it and then we'll move forward. And I hope that there will be some sort of it that we look at and say, I'm not sure one way or the other based on what's out there. Crazy story. All right, NASCAR has handed down punishment stemming from a controversial Clint Boyer spinout at the end of last weekend's race at Richmond. Martin Truex Jr., Boyer's teammate, and Michael Waltrip Racing has been bounced from NASCAR's chase for the Sprint Cup Championship after being docked 50 points for, quote, race manipulation. Maybe we should take away that win that Matt had for choosing Martin Truex Jr. I don't know. Now, Boyer spun out during the final laps at Richmond, bringing about a caution flag and enabling Truex Jr. to secure the 12th and final spot in the standings. Now, Ryan Newman, whom Truex passed in the standings, replaces him after the penalties. In addition, Michael Waltrip Racing was fined $300,000, and general manager Ty Norris suspended indefinitely. Now, while Truex's punishment is severe, NASCAR admits they can't fix all the wrongs caused by Boyer's spin. Nadal wins the Open, folks. Rafael Nadal defeated Novak Djokovic 6-2, 3-6, 6-4, 6-1 to capture the U.S. Open title and his 13th, yes, 13th Grand Slam overall. The 1-versus-2 final matchup didn't disappoint, lasting over 3 hours. That's a lot of tennis and exhausting both players. The 27-year-old Spaniard has dominated this tour this year, improving to 60-3. In 2013 and keeping a perfect 22-0 record on hard courts intact. His 13 major championships ranked behind only Roger Federer's 17 and Pete Sampras's 14. Wow, congrats to Rafael Nadal. He is something else. All right, well, those are your sports headlines for today. If you want to share your thoughts on any of those, pick up that phone. That's right, dial 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Let's hear your thoughts on any of today's headliners. In the meantime, let's get to our guest for today's show. He is an NFL columnist for USA Today Sports and has covered the National Football League since 1981. He has also been a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame Selection Committee since 1997 and has participated in a media panel that has helped select Super Bowl locations for the past 15 years. Please welcome MSU alum Jared Bell to Current Sports. How you doing, Jared?
Yeah, pretty good. Hey, that's not Super Bowl locations, man. That's because if that was the case, I'd be voting for New Orleans every year. No, that's Super Bowl MVP.
MVP, thank you for that. Our scripts sometimes go haywire here, Jared, all right?
Yeah. I'm also doing a show now for ESPN. I'm a contributor for ESPN. It's NFL Insiders. So since we're giving plugs,
there you go.
I'll put that out there. I'll be on this week on Thursday and Friday. So check it out, 3 o'clock Eastern on ESPN.
There you go. I will be tuned in, Jared. I will be tuned in, man. First of all, Jared, talk about your journey toward becoming an NFL columnist for USA Today.
Cover the league, basically. You know, it's been a while. I left Michigan State in 1981 and went to Dallas. And my first job was with the Dallas Cowboys team newspaper. My cousin, Larry Bethea, who was Big Ten MVP at Michigan State and a first-round pick by the Cowboys, was kind enough to let me kind of tag along to Dallas on some trips. And it led to me getting a job with the Cowboys Weekly, and then that led to a full-time job covering high schools with the Dallas Times Herald, and then from there did a bit of radio, and then got with the Cowboys full-time around the mid-80s, and was there when Jerry Jones bought the team and stayed on for about a year after that, and then went to San Francisco and covered the 49ers for 3 years, Joe Montana, Steve Young, Jerry Rice, that crew. And then have been at USA Today for the past 20 years covering the entire NFL.
Jared, quite a ride. You've covered some greats, man. Oh, my goodness.
You know, it's interesting because I'm always, you know, having these flashbacks. You know, what would Tom Landry have said? Or, you know, George Seifert, Ronnie Lott. I mean, Ronnie Lott pops into my mind every summer because one time he told me, he's like, you don't write as well during the preseason as you do during the season, so we don't play as well in the preseason. And so there's been a lot of people giving me some pretty good input along the way. But, you know, it's still football, and I think that's the thing you enjoy about covering it is that you deal with the game, the personalities, the business, the scandals. I mean, I've covered, you know, Ray Lewis's murder trial and Ben Roethlisberger and Michael Irvin, but also covered a lot of fluff stuff along the way too, just as part of covering the league. And hey, not a whole lot of fluff stuff, that's that clear, but you know what I'm saying. It's one of those things where you cover the whole gamut of the league. And so last night I was at FedEx Field for Robert Griffin III's return and Chip Kelly's unveiling. And then on Sunday, I was in New York to see Geno Smith in his debut. So it was a pretty good football weekend.
Yeah, without a doubt. And we're certainly going to dive into it in just a sec. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question for NFL columnist for USA Today, Jared Bell, give us a call here, 517-355-9527. We'll take your call right on the air. So, Jared, week one of the NFL season officially in the books after one incredible week of offensive explosions, I tell you, for NFL quarterbacks specifically. Now, specifically, I want to talk about Peyton Manning, 7 touchdown, 462-yard day against the defending Super Bowl champion Ravens. You've covered the NFL for quite some time, as you just alluded to. Where does Peyton Manning rank on your all-time greats, Jared?
He's up there, and, you know, I'd put him in the top five. And, you know, the thing with Peyton is that he has one Super Bowl ring. So, in my mind, nobody touches Joe Montana still, okay?
Still, huh?
And, for sure. I mean, you know, Joe won 4 Super Bowls with the 49ers. And, you know, that's something that, okay, as we get years removed from it, you tend to just, like, not consider it as much as you used to. But just think about that, okay?
Yeah.
You know, Peyton Manning, I don't know if Peyton Manning is the best quarterback in football today. And you talk about Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. I think Brady would be the one that you'd say, okay, who would you take or who would you consider, you know, ranking higher than Peyton? And it's Brady, and the reason he's got some rings. So Peyton definitely one of the greats, puts up the stats, but you also have to keep in mind that his playoff performances have sometimes been shaky, okay? So that's not to take away anything from him. It's just to kind of say, okay, let's not just say somebody's the greatest just because they put up these big stats. And remember, the numbers that people put up now versus a decade ago, a generation ago, are a lot different. So the rules have changed. It's a passing game, as you alluded to. Look at this weekend. 400 yards doesn't mean what it used to mean, okay?
Right.
But it's still pretty good.
Right. Very true. Very true. So just curious, man, how does your top five look?
I haven't even thought of it like that.
Okay.
I really haven't. So, you know, but, yeah, Montana's on there. You know, Peyton's in there somewhere. Brady's in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bradshaw maybe. But and Bradshaw's got the rings, but he doesn't have the – you know, the quarterback in skill like some others.
Yeah.
Johnny Unitas, who I did not see play. I mean, I'd have to consider him in that mix. And,
yeah.
You know, Marino. And, yeah, so you can,
it's a good list.
Can definitely cross hairs with a lot of guys. But, you know, we know they're good. I mean, we know there's some good ones there. I did not mention Brett Favre in the top five.
Yeah.
But he would probably be in the top 10.
He's in top 10. He's in my top 10. I tell you that, Jared. Even though, I mean, you know, he's a gunslinger, but, you know, Brett's toughness was something else, man. Now, I got to ask you about RG3's performance. Again, you were there firsthand. You saw it last night. For me, Jared, lackluster to say the least. 329 yards. He did have two TDs late in the game. He threw two picks. Jared, do you think he came back a bit too early? Evaluate RG3's. What did you see from him last night?
Well, rusty. I mean, no question about that.
Mm.
The mechanics were off a little bit. He was a little tentative early. As the game progressed, even though he put up a lot of yards in garbage time, I think that was a confidence builder for him because he was doing some things as the game progressed that he didn't do earlier in the game. And I'm talking about escaping from the pocket, running out of bounds a couple times. I mean, early in the game, he didn't do that. And I think it's been in his head and in Mike Shanahan's head, hey, let's not put this guy at risk for hits and all of that. And that's fine because you want to preserve the guy, but, you know, sometimes it could be tough to try to play scared, if you will, you know,
right.
To play for something not to happen. And I think that we'll see Robert Griffin III be the player that he can be once, you know, he kind of takes some of that off of him in terms of the hesitation. And, you know, they can be smart about it and do things with the scheme and not call certain plays as much as they did in the past to limit the hits, but by and large, you're going to have to play football, and you're just going to have to go and let the chips fall where they may. But I thought as the game went on, he looked a little bit more like himself. And
mm-hmm.
still, the accuracy is not there. And that was one of the most glaring things. And some of that comes from mechanics and techniques, and you can look at it. They're going to break them down, and I'm sure the Redskins are breaking them down and everybody else who's watching it
right.
to see what he was doing, if he was stepping into his throw, setting his feet properly, you know, having the angles with his body. And you just saw so many incompletions last night that you didn't see from him before. So that has to come. And that comes – I was talking to Mike Shanahan about it last week, and, you know, that's going to come from repetition. So you say, didn't play in preseason, yeah, you can look at that, but I still don't think that's a valid argument to say he should have played in preseason because, remember, the guy's 8 months since surgery. So
yeah.
He'll get stronger next week and the week after that and then on into the season. And so last night was kind of his preseason game. So
right.
That's what I saw from him. I saw a guy in the postgame situation now who, even though he was classy and gracious like he is, he's a joy to be around and to listen to. And
I think he is.
You know, he's got his head in the right place. But I also detected he was a little ticked off that it didn't quite, you know, work the way it went. And he didn't say a whole lot that would have suggested that, but I'm just saying from a guy who I've seen now since he's been in the league and been in these settings with him, I can kind of detect that.
You can kind of read it.
Yeah. And so I'm sure he'll be hard on himself and Shanahan will be hard, and they'll try to keep going. But that's the first impression. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure on him. He put some of that pressure on himself, but, you know, here we go. But in terms of the preseason argument, I just think that goes out the window because, you know, he would have had to come back, and how much would you have played in preseason? It's just the process that you go through. But let me mention one more thing, Al.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you think about Adrian Peterson last year and he came back, with the amazing season he had, which raised the bar for everybody else,
yep.
which may be unfair in itself, but you think back to when he first came back, those first couple of games, he was limited. He only had a handful of carries, you know, maybe 12 or 15 carries. It wasn't until, like, week three where he really got back into the groove of being the every down or almost every down back that you know, he is. And then from there, boom, 2,000 yards, right?
Well, thank you for reminding me that. I tell you what, I mean, that season was so hyped up that I guess we just forget about the beginning of that season, huh?
Yeah, no question. And it's easy to, because Adrian Peterson didn't play in preseason as well.
Right.
And so, you know, hey, it's a hard thing for a quarterback. We're talking about a running back in Adrian Peterson, but a quarterback did not play in preseason. I mean, that's a tough one. And I think Brady and Peyton Manning are the only quarterbacks in the past decade, besides RG3, to start a season opener without taking a snap in preseason. And I remember talking to Peyton about it a few years ago and what he missed from it. And you're talking about Peyton and Brady, veteran guys, right?
Yeah.
Were in their systems for so long, so you'd expect that maybe they would be able to step back into it. But even then, I remember talking to Peyton about it, and it was kind of like, hey, the timing, the rhythm, you really kind of need that. You get some of it in practice, and then in preseason, you don't play a whole lot, but maybe you get a series in one game and two series in the next game, and you
right.
just kind of ease back into it. Well, for Robert Griffin III, there's no easing back, really, when you talk about going at game speed.
That is so true. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us to Current Sports, we are talking with NFL columnist for USA Today, Jared Bell. Now, Jared, I want to turn this thing a little bit into a more local feel for those in Michigan. Of course, the Detroit Lions. Now, they topped the Vikings on Sunday. Reggie Bush, he looked great in that one. 21 carries for 90 yards, including 101 yards through the air. What was your assessment of that game, and what's your outlook for the Lions?
Yeah, I think that's what you wanted from Reggie Bush. It's what you saw on Sunday. So now let's see if you can do it again and so on and so forth. And I think he can. I think that's the dimension that he gives them. Part of it, and what I saw the other day, just from watching the highlights and seeing how the game flowed, was I think he had only like four catches. So what did he get, like 77 on one?
Yeah.
But that's what you get with him, right?
Right,
you get
right.
that ability to make that big play. And now it's going to be incumbent on Matt Stafford to not force the ball downfield and really realize that he has this check down option in Reggie Bush. And, you know, when they were recruiting Reggie Bush and Matt Stafford was involved in that,
yeah.
I remember the conversation about the, hey, I will check the ball down to you. So that's going to be a great thing, and it's going to cause defenses to really have to, you know, account for where Reggie Bush is. And when you do that, maybe you take a little bit of concentration off Megatron, and so it helps. But they really need him now to do that, because their other receivers besides Calvin Johnson, I mean, Nate Burleson is on the downside of it, okay?
Right.
And they need to develop more on the outside to complement Calvin Johnson. So can't do that right now, really, in terms of who you can bring in. I think that'll be tough. So to make do with what you have, Reggie Bush can do that. And the thing about Reggie Bush, too, that he can do is he can line up in the slot and he runs routes like a receiver.
He does.
It's one thing to say check it down to the running back and he can make a big play, right?
Right.
Yeah, and they wanted that. They've been wanting that since, you know, Javid Best had the concussion issues. So they've been looking for that for a couple years. But the thing that separates Bush from most, you know, fine receiving running backs is that he runs routes like a receiver. Marshall Faulk used to do it, and I'm talking about all those subtle things, Al, you know,
yeah.
like the double moves and the, you know, the breaks and the cuts and setting up routes. Matt
right.
Forte actually does that very well for the Chicago Bears, but, you know, people will tell you that, you know, that most running backs don't run them like receivers. So you got that, and then he can run the ball too. So we didn't even mention that yet. So he can
right.
still, you know, like you said, you know, 90 yards on the ground, he can give him that, which he can, because that gets overlooked with him, I think it's a great thing for the Lions.
It's certainly special. It definitely has Lions fans across the, you know, this entire state buzzing, I tell you that. Now, I want to also just really touch on one aspect of that game. Ndamukong Suh's hit.
Yeah.
You know, the cheap shot that he gave, the low block to Minnesota Vikings center John Sullivan. What do you think should be done as far as this goes when it comes to Ndamukong Suh? Because this is not his first rodeo when you talk about fines and suspensions here, Jared,
yeah.
as you know.
Yeah, it's the whole repeat offender thing that gets him, because he's been in the league off, I mean, physically, you know, let's go and have this big, you know, meeting up there. I mean, he, as you talked about it at the Open, he's got a history, he's got a record, right?
Yeah.
And so when you're talking about a guy who has been there and been disciplined before, then I think you come with a different standard when you start talking about suspensions and whatnot. And I know that they're still considering that, because I got it straight from Ray Anderson in the league office that they're not ruling that out, as you mentioned on the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you try to send that message if you're the league office, because if you don't, then what happens the next time? And then your credibility with your whole program of trying to, you know, wipe out unnecessary hits and protect the players better, I mean, it loses some of its sting. So I'd feel real worried that Ndamukong Suh, if I'm a Lions fan, might have to sit out a game or so.
Now, is it so? I guess it's pretty safe to say now, Jared, that we can label Ndamukong Suh as a, quote, dirty player, right?
You know, I don't know. I really don't, because things happen in the heat of the battle, but, you know, he definitely has that reputation. I'd call him an intense player, and kind of start with that.
Okay.
You know, but you can have your moments, your flare ups, if you will.
Right.
And I think that's the thing. Hey, going into the season, you know, Ndamukong Suh, you heard so many great things about him. And I didn't make it to Lions training camp this year, but I talked to some people up there and some people within the organization too, and people were telling me that he's a different guy in terms of the way that he has been conducting himself as a leader. And part of that was by necessity, because Kyle Vandenbosch left, okay, they didn't bring him back, and then Corey Williams as well. And these were the guys in that defensive line room that Ndamukong Suh looked up to as a young guy coming up. Even though Suh was the best player on the line, he kind of respected these veterans, and so he let them have the floor in a lot of ways. And Vandenbosch was the guy, one of the Lions players told me, he said, hey, Vandenbosch was so valuable to our defense because he was the guy who made sure that everybody was lined up in the right places, even the linebackers and whatnot, not just the D linemen. And they really needed somebody to step up and kind of have the whole defensive responsibility to provide that leadership. And like I said, that leadership also comes, you know, plays itself out in the strategies that you are trying to employ and making sure that everybody understands what they need to do. And Suh has been stepping up to be that guy. He's even been more engaging to the media in Detroit. I mean, I heard that from one of the reporters. And you wouldn't know this guy if you saw him before. So I've always found him to be a pretty intelligent guy.
Definitely. Yeah,
maybe not an outgoing, gregarious guy. And yes, he kind of puts a wall around himself. But the times that I've talked to him, and I've had, you know, a couple good sit-downs with him, I really did find him to be, you know, like I say, a pretty sharp guy who kind of gets it and understands a whole lot. So sometimes you get that, and then once you go on the field and you turn the light switch on, maybe you don't see that. You see the intensity, or, you know, maybe a little bit of lack of discipline or a little bit of frustration, and then you get what you got on Sunday.
Right. I could definitely see it from that angle, too. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Jared Bell, NFL columnist for USA Today. Now, Jared, before I let you go, I want to briefly touch on one last aspect. Now, the NFL concussion settlement. Now, the NFL, of course, has reached a tentative $765 million settlement over concussion-related brain injuries among its 18,000 retired players, agreeing to compensate victims, pay for medical exams, and underwrite research, and so on. What do you think? Do you think this is the right decision to do this, Jared?
Well, I think it's right in terms of settling the lawsuit, and you could look at that from both sides. Listening to the plaintiff's attorneys, they wanted to strike a quick deal because they said, hey, you know, we've got people who need this money now, and no doubt there are guys like that. Yeah. There may not be enough money left at some point for some guys who are eligible now and may have issues, say, 5, 10, 15 years from now. So that's going to be interesting. It was good for the NFL to get this out of the way. And you say $765 million, that's a lot of money to me.
Oh,
but
tons.
In the NFL context, it's like, you know, half of what they get in 1 year for Monday Night Football from ESPN. So I think a lot of people thought there was going to be a bigger settlement. I mean, I heard $3-4 billion, you know, when this thing first jumped off, as people throwing numbers out, insurance people who know more about this than I do. But I think the thing that was going to always be difficult for the plaintiffs to prove was how much of the damage occurred when they were in the NFL versus when they were in college or high school.
Right.
And that's a real difficult thing when you start getting into a courtroom. So I think that was, you know, part of the pressure on the plaintiffs to go ahead and try to strike a deal, in addition to the judge saying, hey, you guys make a deal or neither one of you are going to like what I come up with, which was probably going to be arbitration, right?
Yeah.
And when you get arbitration, you don't get to bring in – the victims and show them to a jury or to a judge and, you know, invoke some sympathy. Once you go in that arbitration process, it's, you know, pretty cut and dry, and it's, you know, you take all the emotion out of it, basically. So, right. You know, I think both sides kind of had to make a deal. But the thing I'm hearing, Al, from talking to some of the guys who will be in that class, they don't know some of the answers. Like, well, okay, do I qualify? How do I qualify? How do I try to reach to get some of these benefits once it gets, you know, final, assuming it gets final approval?
So there's a gray area there.
A lot of questions about it. So I'm actually in the midst of trying to find out more about it myself, Al, and will probably for a little bit of time here.
Well, definitely, man. Well, we got to keep in touch, Jared. I tell you, man, we definitely will be having you on the show in the future, man. How's that sound?
That's real good, man. I appreciate it. You know, you're you got some big shoes to fill with Earl Robinson.
Oh, but, yeah.
I know you're up to it, pal.
Thanks so much, Jared. I really appreciate it, man. There you have it. Jared Bell, NFL columnist for USA Today Sports. Jared, thanks so much, man.
Okay, take care.
All right, you too.
Yep, all right, bye.
All right, well, when we return to current sports, we will update you on the latest developments in the world of MSU football. Yes, the NFL. Well, not the NFL. I'm still stuck on NFL here. We just finished talking with Jared Bell. The MSU QB race, folks. As Coach Mark D'Antonio reveals a bit more into who is in the mix to start this weekend against Youngstown State. We'll also talk Lions and Wolverine football. How do you think the Lions will be this season? What were your thoughts on Sunday's game against the Vikings? 517-355-9527 again. 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. Current sports is coming right back.
Well, the clock says it's time to close now.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, the latest on the debate over military strikes against Syria, plus preserving summer's fruits and vegetables into the fall and winter by pickling them.
Pickling is to cooking. What may be like a really easy paint by number might be to making art.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
Hi, I'm WKAR's Emmanuel Berry, host of Current State Weekend. Spend your weekends with me as I highlight current state weekday stories and explore mid-Michigan's vibrant arts and culture scene. We'll cover from the latest at Wharton Center to the diverse individuals that make Michigan's creative sector sing. It's Current State Weekend, Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at 1 on AM 870 WKAR.
Good people, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, as always, Al Martin. We are now talking Spartans. Yes, the MSU football team. Mark D'Antonio had his weekly presser this morning at 11:30 in the morning. And our own Alex Shark took a trip down there to visit the presser. And Mark D'Antonio had some interesting things to say, more specifically about this whole QB race when you talk about Connor Cook, Andrew Maxwell, Tyler O'Connor. And now, Damian Terry's name is in the mix. Yes, Damian Terry, folks, the redshirt freshman. Here's a little bit of what Mark D'Antonio had to say at today's presser.
It's tough to get three quarterbacks ready, first of all. It's almost impossible to get four. It's tough to get three. You can get two, but usually when you're repping throughout a game week, your number one quarterback gets most of the reps. He gets probably 65% of the reps, I would say. So, that's what you're trying to figure out. You want to get to the one. I think that's important, we get to the one. But at the same time, I felt compelled to look at the number of points we're putting up on the board and the explosive plays that are happening and make decisions based on that in that football game on Saturday, because I think it is my job to provide opportunities for people. And with that said, we went in that direction. And we will probably go in that direction early this week. You know, I think I know that the things are bracketed right now on the depth chart, but we'll try and go in that vein this week with working two, and see where we go. And Connor Cook will go in, you know, as the guy with getting the number one reps today, and we'll split the two reps. We'll we'll check the two reps. I should say it that way to be straightforward. We'll check the two reps to see if the guy who is running number two is capable of doing this, which means Damian Terry will get those two reps. And then beyond that, we've got to make some decisions, some quick decisions, tough decisions based on today's practices. So all four are sort of in the mix, but sort of we're trying to figure it out. But I do think that based on Damian's performance in the summer and the one practice and his performance as of late, you know, he deserves an opportunity to show what he can do in practice. And it's pretty self-explanatory. We'll evaluate practice. You know, our coaching staff, myself, we want to find the one guy. We want the one guy to emerge. I don't care who it is. They're all great young people. They're all people that have had success in high school. They're all people that have talent. But one of those guys have to emerge, and they have to be, you know, it's going to take a strong individual to do any of this, whether it's to play or to sit back and understand the situation. It's going to take a strong individual to do all these things. And I think we have those people in our program. You know, I have their best interests at heart. I truly do. So there's no pressure here for me. It's just the fact that I've got to create opportunities for other people. You know, Andrew Maxwell is mature enough as an individual. He's mature enough as a player. He has a lot of experience that he can almost be like an NFL backup quarterback in the sense that he doesn't need to take the reps, and he can take mental reps, and he can take a few reps. But the other two guys, Tyler O'Connor and Damian Terry, they need reps. They need the pure physical reps to be able to figure this out. And then we have to make decisions. And to be fair and honest with everybody involved, we got to see what the other guy can do.
Oh, boy. Decisions, decisions, decisions. That was head MSU football coach Mark D'Antonio during his weekly press conference this morning at 11:30 a.m. addressing the whole quarterback situation and the state of his team, quite frankly, and what they've gone through these past first two games. For the MSU football team. Of course, I'm joined by Alex Sharg and Matt Luckey now. And also, we'll be taking your calls right now about the Lions. And if you got any thoughts or opinions on Mark D'Antonio's comments just now, give us a call. Pick up that phone. Yes, you listening right now. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. What do you think of Reggie Bush on Sunday? What do you think about the future outlook for the Detroit Lions? And also, if you got any comments about the MSU football team, we, of course, had a lot of them yesterday. Guys, Alex, well, first of all, you were there. What was the mood like with D'Antonio?
He was a lot more calm this week. Last week, he was a little testy, especially after the game. This week, very under control. He's very poised. He understands, and he pointed it out. I know that there's a lot of pressure for me to put these guys in this situation to succeed. I'm not feeling the pressure. This is D'Antonio, of course. But it's the fact that I need to put these guys in the right places to succeed, and they need to make the plays.
You know, it really, really came to a surprise to me that, throughout the reports that have come out now about D'Antonio's comments this morning, Connor Cook will be getting the starting reps, the number one reps throughout practice this week. Damian Terry will be number two. And Andrew Maxwell, of course, and Tyler O'Connor, I believe they're still in the mix as well. I thought Tyler O'Connor would be with that starting group. That really shocked me because, like I said yesterday, I thought out of all of the quarterbacks, the three quarterbacks that played on Saturday, I thought Tyler O'Connor had the best day. But, and again, he only had four plays, though. Four plays, so I don't know. And, Matt, you said it, too. I don't know how you give a fair evaluation of O'Connor when he played just four plays. I don't know.
It seems like none of them are getting enough time. Everybody remembers 2009 and the quarterback controversy there. This is exponentially worse because you have guys play a series. They obviously do poorly because everybody did poorly. When your leading passer has 40 yards against South Florida,
yeah,
something's not right.
Something's not right.
It might go deeper than the quarterbacks even, but you know, you need guys to actually maybe get into a rhythm. I think that's something that's certainly been lacking from the offense. And when you have guys going for a series and they're constantly looking at the sideline, waiting to get the hook after any little mistake, it seems like you're not doing them any favors. You're putting them in a position to fail, and it's the opposite of what he's wanting to do. But if you have a guy go in for a drive and it's a three and out and then he doesn't play for the rest of the game, what kind of opportunity is that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, and it's something I alluded to yesterday, you know, talking. I mean, when you talk about competition for a starting role, it's something, a role as big as quarterback for the team. I mean, that's the biggest role you can have in football, the most important role for a football team. And you talk about guys competing for that role, and now the season has started, and they're competing as the season's going on. I mean, when they go out there, whoever it is, Cook, Maxwell, Terry now, I mean, whoever it is, I'm sure when they go out there having the back of their mind saying to themselves, if I screw up just one time, if I throw a pick, I'm done. My name's off the list. I'm done for this battle. You know what I mean? So they go out there with this level of conservativeness, and they're walking on eggshells. They are not, you know, and that's what really, really impressed me from Tyler O'Connor, if anyone, throughout that entire day, because he was willing to at least take a shot in the end zone
right. On
that one drive. You know what I mean? Just take a shot. Just see. I want to score. You know,
but
I wanna...
at the same time, he was in the red zone, so it wasn't really taking a shot.
Well, no, he took a shot to try to score a touchdown.
Yeah, man.
With three jerseys around.
A passing touchdown, Alex.
That's risk. When you talk about – that's a risk for this football team when you talk about this QB position. I mean, they're all they all know right now that just one mistake, one interception, and their names is crossed off that list, and they're riding the bench for the rest of the year. And that's what really caught my eye about Tyler O'Connor out of the three of them, because Tyler was willing to say, okay, I'm just going to go out here and just – let my hair loose, man. I'm going to take a shot. You know, I'm going to take a shot. I'm going to run a little bit. I'm going to be mobile a little bit. And if anyone, he was really the only one that I saw taking risks like that. Maxwell, we know he doesn't take risks down the field. I mean, he's passing 3 yards when the stake is, you know, 9 yards up. You know, I don't get that.
That's fair when talking about risk. But there's one word I want to talk about that we haven't brought about yet, and it's elusivity. Out of the three quarterbacks, all of them have ran. But only one of the quarterbacks in my eyes.
Not Maxwell.
He has ran to some extent.
Maxwell has not run at all.
Yes, he has.
Alex.
He's been running for his life, maybe.
Yeah, running for his life, maybe in the backfield. Yeah. He has not tried to gain yards on the ground.
In the first
Barely.
Game, he did.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not saying a lot. I just said all three quarterbacks have ran. Okay? Fair.
Yeah, they
all have ran.
They all play football, so they do run, but Maxwell has not run.
No. Maxwell has even gone for a QB when no one was open. Goes out to the sideline.
Okay, what's the point when you're
talking
about
running? The point is between Maxwell, Cook, and O'Connor, O'Connor is the most elusive. So for
me, if we're looking for
someone who's running, and you remember when Connor got in that one drive, the spin move and then running down the middle, the QB draw up the middle. So for me, he's not only shiftier to tackle, but like you said, he's taking the chances.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I didn't know where you're going with that whole running thing. But yeah, I definitely agree with you on that, Alex. He's willing to take more chances out of the three of them. I'm very interested to see now if, you know, Damian Terry, if he's going to get – I mean, because if you play him – that's it. You know, his red shirt is, you know, off now. He's out there. And that's risky.
It's risky, but look at the defense we have. Is it not worth it to try and win? I mean, you have to try and win right now. Our defense is putting up 2 touchdowns a game.
Yeah.
Like,
look at Shalique Calhoun.
If anybody can get in there, exactly. If anybody can get in there and make plays, put him in the game because that's all they need. And I like Alex's point about elusivity. Great word,
A. That's a great word.
But B, you know, you're right, because it's not so much even running downfield. It's extending plays in the pocket and making things happen, because part of the other thing that people are complaining about is that the receivers don't get any separation. But if you have a guy back there who can make a defensive lineman miss and extend the play even 1 or 2 seconds, someone can break off their route and get open, and that's where you see big plays. That's why mobile quarterbacks are such a big deal, not only because they can hurt you on the ground, but because they can extend plays and help guys get open downfield, and that opens up everything. And then you get big chunks of yardage, and then you're actually looking like a Division I offense and not what we've been seeing the last 2 weeks.
Right, exactly. And you know, again, folks, we're taking your calls right now, 517-355-9527. We won't just talk MSU football. Anything is on your noggin. Anything. Give us a call. Again, we're kind of trying to hone in on the Lions. We're going to shift things to the Lions.
Now Al, real quick, back to the other game on Saturday versus USF.
Yeah.
The one play we talked about on the show yesterday, the one play was when the USF lineman lost his helmet, went for the quarterback without his helmet. Did you hear about this play?
Yeah, it's a ridiculous rule. I don't get the rule.
A USF lineman, well, I'm going to say something about that rule, but a USF lineman lost his helmet on the play, and listeners, if you did not tune in yesterday, he loses his helmet, tackles the quarterback who has his helmet on.
Right.
But the USF lineman gets a 15-yard penalty for
unsportsmanlike
conduct.
You cannot continue a play after your helmet is off.
Exactly. Now, I thought about this for a day until a buddy of mine brought up yesterday that it's the player's safety they're trying to stop. So it's not necessarily.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's why the rule. Yeah, I definitely.
Right, so, but I do get that. I do get that.
Though. I don't think it's unsportsmanlike conduct.
Right, exactly.
Rule.
I don't. I don't think it's 15 yards. Maybe 5 for continuing the play, sending a message. But I don't know if it's an automatic first down in 15 yards.
I understand that you're trying to protect the player, but if he's willing to go out there and still play with his helmet off for, you know, 5 or 10 seconds, I mean, why is that a penalty on him?
Well,
I don't
because
understand that.
He's putting himself in such a dangerous situation that, you know, let's say you're an MSU lineman and you want to block that guy, you can't because he has no helmet on. So you're not going to – you can't really engage a guy who has no helmet on because if, let's say, you hit him and your heads touch – he's feeling it a lot more than you are, and then you have a big player safety issue, and then it just explodes.
Well, yeah, that,
and, you know,
that is true.
You
I
might
mean,
end a guy's
during,
career because he's...
Yeah, but during the play, I mean, if his helmet pops off and play is going in the heat of the moment, you know...
Exactly. It's tough to hold back.
Exactly. I don't agree with that rule. I don't like the rule.
Listeners, do you agree with that rule?
Just call 517-355-9527. Give us your thoughts on anything. We're going to shift things to the Lions right now. We just talked with NFL sports columnist for USA Today Sports, Jared Bell. He knows everything NFL. He's also a graduate of MSU. Jared kind of ran down what he thought of the Lions' performance this past Sunday. Reggie Bush, who was he was really something else. Had a lot of yards on the ground, more through the air. You know, he was something special. Guys, what was your impression of the Lions on Sunday?
Well, I listened to the third and fourth quarter on my drive back from the
you
airport.
Are in London again. Matt was in London, man. I'm jealous. I'm jealous.
You should be. It was great. Yeah. I loved every second of it. But coming back home, it was nice to see, you know, some American football.
Yeah.
You have to make that distinction now.
Right.
Coming back. But, you know,
right.
Or at least hearing it. And just everything that Bush brings, it's terrific for that offense.
It's
that other weapon that they've needed for so long to keep people honest with Calvin. Because now you have two blue chippers basically for Stafford to throw to, and then everybody else will get open. But it just makes the offense so dangerous. It's like twice as explosive as it was, because I mean the little dump pass and he just takes
and he just
off
takes
just
off man
gone
just speed
it's like
it's elusivity.
He's got a lot of that.
He's got a lot of that, man. I tell you what. And Reggie Bush, you know, just running down the numbers for, you know, other players other than Reggie Bush. Matthew Stafford, he threw for 357 yards, 2 touchdowns, had 1 pick. Adrian Peterson had 18 carries for only 93 yards. You usually see him crack 100. 2 touchdowns, though. I tell you what, I thought the Lions defense did an exceptional job. Even though Adrian Peterson, AP, he ran back, you know, that touchdown on the very first play for the, you know, Minnesota drive. Other than that, the Lions did a relatively good job against AP overall throughout that entire game, I thought. The numbers are still gaudy a little bit. I mean, 18 carries, 93 yards. I mean, but that carry on that first carry was 70-something yards.
Yeah,
exactly.
So that's
exactly
incredible.
That's a
huge less
chunk
than a yard a carry.
Exactly.
After that play.
I mean, it's truly remarkable. And, you know, I really hope that defense, you know, continues that play. And his secondary, I thought, didn't do a bad job as well. So overall, I think that Lions defense looks pretty good. The offense, I'm a little worried still about the receivers. Even though they did key in, and you could see it. I mean, people are keying in now on Calvin Johnson. And you saw an example of that with the Minnesota Vikings. Calvin really couldn't get off. He was double-teamed many times throughout the game. And, you know, guys like a Nate Burleson, they have to start to step up now. And it's good. You know, Jared Bell alluded to having Reggie Bush as, you know, a guy who is not only a great guy, you know, to have in the backfield, but he also runs route like a receiver. It's like having an extra receiver out there. He brings so much to the table. But, you know, other guys other than Reggie and Calvin, who I think he will have a better game against the Cardinals this weekend. But other than those two, I think receivers have to step up a little bit more and create separation against DBs down the field as the Lions season progresses. So
yeah, I mean, Edwards played pretty well.
Yeah.
But yeah, because you're gonna have guys double and tripling Calvin, and then a lot of attention paid to Reggie Bush, so you're gonna have single coverage on that other receiver. I mean, that's the guy. He's got to beat his man. You know, it's an easy matchup. You know, you only have to beat one guy, and then you're gonna be open. So I think if somebody can step up into that role, that's a scary offense to prepare for.
Right.
Terrifying. Probably one of the most the most fearful in the NFL because they have everything.
Without a doubt. Again, if you guys got any thoughts about the Lions, we have about 6 minutes left. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I want to ask you guys, do you think the Lions are going to make the playoffs? I think we predicted that later, but let's revisit it really quick. I think they will, guys. I think, you know, looking at, you know, the first impressions for them Vikings game, it looks solid, and I think they compete with, can compete with any team in that NFC. So
I think they make it.
Yeah.
And a big win over Minnesota in week one.
Yeah, huge win over Minnesota, yeah.
It's looking like it. Yeah, and the other thing about the Lions is just how good the defensive line is. Yeah. Although Sue committed that really costly penalty.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring up that next, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd say they're definitely top five in the league defensive lineman-wise.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to bring up that Sue hit because when I look at it, I didn't get a chance to really sit down and look at the hit, but this morning I got up and looked at it. Guys, that was a dirty hit. Let's just call it like it is. I mean, it was nowhere close to the guy running the ball. Sullivan's just by himself. Why?
You know what I mean? Would you call Sue a dirty player?
Yes. I will call Sue a dirty player. I mean, if you look at the past instances, and you can go back. And
would you say every one of those past instances were dirty hits?
Yeah. I think so.
The helmet hit?
The helmet, and trying to say, you know, the Thanksgiving game when, you know, he tried to stomp, or, you know, when he gets up and he's just emotional. And he stomps on the player's head. I mean, that kind of stuff.
He saves his best stuff for Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
He keeps his A material for that national TV audience so he can, you know, really make a statement to the NFL. But
Right. Now, I will say this. Even though Sue, who I believe is a dirty player, guys, I think it's good for this Lions team. This Lions team has not had an identity for ever. Since the Barry Sanders days, I guess you could say. Barry Sanders was the face of the organization back in the 90s. This team hasn't had an identity in so long.
Right.
And now you have a guy like Sue who is not afraid, obviously, to kind of push the envelope when it comes to things out there on the field. It kind of reminds me of the Bad Boy Piston days. You know, when you talk about Bill Laimbeer, who was, you know, known for his dirty play, you know. But, you know, when you looked at the Pistons, I mean, they were known as this hardcore team. You weren't going to run over them.
Right.
They're looking you dead in the eye, bringing on. And Sue is bringing that. And it's bringing an identity to the Lions team that hasn't been there, an identity that hasn't been there in quite a long time. So when you look at it, I do think he's a dirty player. Looking at his past, it's not his first rodeo, as I said, when it comes to suspensions. But it's good for the team. I think
it's good to a point until they start losing like they did last year. And then they look like a bunch of hotheads who can't keep themselves in check and actually play the game. Mm. And I mean, I feel like that's why Schwartz got into a little bit of hot water towards the end of last season. You know, they go 4-12, terrible year, especially after the year before, and just all the penalties, all the dumb things that they do to cost themselves games. And this kind of falls into that category. Had we lost, that is the lead story, is Sue's hit
right.
and what it meant. And, you know, it's good to be tough, but, you know, people like to look back at the Bad Boys fondly because they won two championships.
Yeah, they won. You got to win. Yeah,
you have to win. And if it's costing you games, you can be as tough as you want, but people are going to regard you as idiots who they can get under your skin and take you out of the actual game. You got to keep yourself a little bit in check.
I agree with you.
I like the toughness and, you know, playing a little bit dirty, I guess, but you know, it can't cost you games. And I feel like after last year, especially, if it does start costing us games, then that perception gets even more, you know, negative, and then we're into a slippery slope, and then maybe it costs Schwartz's job.
Yeah, I mean, like my dad used to say growing up, I mean, if I'm going to talk crap, I got to back it up.
Exactly.
Whatever I'm doing,
you
got to
win.
You got to win. And, you know, I do like it because, like I say, it's bringing a certain persona to this Lions team. At the same time, you got to get W's.
Yeah.
So, and again, just looking at his history, he was fined 5 times in his first 3 NFL seasons, suspended for stomping on the arm of Green Bay Packers offensive lineman Evan Dietrich Smith on Thanksgiving Day, and last year he was fined $30,000 for kicking Houston Texans quarterback Matt Schaub in the groin on Thanksgiving Day. And as a rookie, he was fined 3 times. I could go on and on, Jake Delhomme, Jay Cutler. So, you say it's not his first rodeo. He's done this before. Look at his resume. He's a dirty player. He's a rebel. He's definitely. All right, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Sharg, Matt Lutke, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Wharf, our station manager here at WKR. Thanks to USA Today NFL columnist Jared Bell for joining me on the show. Same time, same place tomorrow. You can listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and stay cool out there. It's a scorcher. As always, be easy, people.